Diversity is on many companies' minds as this country's workforce undergoes a huge demographic shift. Silicon Valley is one of the worst offenders, according to today's guest. The long-practiced tradition of "I only hire my Ivy League buddies," though practical in starting a business from nothing, has created a non-exclusive culture in one of the fastest-growing industries, tech and startups. As Kansas City startup community begins to really take shape, we have a unique opportunity here to avoid falling into the same dilemma as Silicon Valley. Here today to tell us more about this is Lewis Bird. He's founder of the Kansas City-based Melly Blue Branding, which describes itself as a cross-cultural branding agency. And Lewis, so nice to have you here. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Steve, for having me.
You wrote a commentary for Startland News about this issue. Why?
Well, I wrote it because as of right now, I've been very active in the entrepreneurial space here in Kansas City for the past 6 years. And, you know, with the growth of entrepreneurship, especially with the startups and the tech scene, I'm starting to see much of what is happening in Silicon Valley. There is absolutely no, there's not enough inclusion. And what I mean by inclusion, it goes beyond just race and ethnicity, but certainly gender and things like that as well.
It's got to be a little unnerving. You're seeing history, in a sense, repeat itself right here in your backyard.
Right.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, I understand it in a sense that, you know, traditionally technology is or STEM, I should say, science, technology, engineering, math, is one of those fields that, you know, there isn't a lot of influx of, you know, minority people, as I like to call us, new majority people.
Sure.
There's not a lot of influx there. But I also feel like we can be doing a better job in making sure that we are reaching out and trying to change that.
I'm just curious, Lewis, how Silicon Valley became so insular to begin with. A lot of folks who look at this will be surprised because they think, well, tech is new and fresh and young people who are more inclusive by nature. So why is there an issue here?
Well, the issue is simply because as far as Silicon Valley is concerned, it all starts back at the company inception. If you have a organization that started by a group of college roommates, they all have very similar backgrounds. Well, when you're a cash-strapped startup company, it's very much possible for you to reach out to other people within your direct network and bring them on to be a part of your team or whatnot.
It's a scary time. Money's short. You
Money's
don't want
short.
To gamble on people you don't know very well, so you're going with people you know well.
Exactly. Going with people that you know well. And what happens is, over time, that type of mindset, you know, becomes concrete in the brand, and concrete within the vision of the company, and it basically transcends throughout time, and you're stuck there. And then what happens is, when you become a $2 billion corporation or more, now you're under this microscope, everybody's looking at you like, hey, where are all your black people at, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, then it's like, what do we do?
How aware is Silicon Valley of this problem, and any sense of what's being done to correct it out in California?
Yeah, they're very aware of it, especially you have some tech giants that are really, you know, going through leaps and bounds to change this perception of their own company and the industry at large. Prime example is Intel. Intel is doing a fantastic job at changing it. And you have other tech giants, Facebook, Google, all of them are addressing this issue. But the problem is, they're only approaching it from one slant, and that's diversity.
Meaning raw numbers on a sheet of paper.
Raw numbers on a sheet of paper. And while internally they are thinking about it from the perspective of, yes, we need to change our industry and our culture, but the way that they're approaching it, by just strictly focusing on diversity recruitment, they're not taking enough time to really, really work on their inner culture and how to make their culture more inclusive so people from diverse backgrounds are willing to stay there.
Explain that to me, this need to change the culture inside these companies. What are you talking about exactly?
Basically, what I'm getting at is, I believe that the answer to all this is something called cultural competency. And that's what I tend to focus on with my clients. So imagine this, you have a pyramid with three parts. At the bottom of the pyramid, you know, that's the broadest part, it's the foundation. That's your cultural competency aspect. Built on top of that is inclusion, which takes up, you know, the middle of the pyramid. That's also a very strong part. And then at the very top is the part that people see from the distance if you're in the pyramid. That's the diversity. And it's the smallest part of the pyramid, but it makes you recognize this is a pyramid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is so many companies are focusing on the top of the pyramid where there are so many bricks missing at the bottom that it's crumbling.
So this is what you do. How do you begin to change the culture inside? Because it sounds like an easy problem to identify. I'm guessing that addressing it effectively is a whole different matter altogether.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
The thing with cultural competency is for every organization is completely different. You know, the idea is similar, but every organization has its own set of issues. So as far as what I do and my team, what we do is we focus on addressing those issues and trying to understand, starting with the leadership. It has to start with the company leadership and understand, well, what is the problem that you're facing? Why do you think of diversity as a silo or quotas or something like that? Or is it actually a part of your company culture and this is what we believe in and not just saying it on a website?
How often do you find CEOs saying to you, yeah, I just thought I needed to get greater numbers of people of color in my company, and that's going to solve the problem?
Well, surprisingly, in our very PC environment today, not enough people are very honest with themselves and saying that's why we go about, you know, or that's how we've gone about doing diversity. A lot of times they're under the delusion that they have been approaching it in the most appropriate way. But the reality is you have to really understand and take ownership of where you at as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Where are your personal biases at? Because the reality is we all have bias, and there's nothing wrong with bias. It's only when you think of your bias as basically how you go about making decisions, whether you hire somebody or who you do business with, that's when it becomes a problem. So basically working with leadership, you know, not often enough are they really honest to say we have a problem and this is how we're going about doing it. So what I have to do is really pull that out of them.
I was going to say, how do you do that? Because you're talking to the person in charge here, the person who's hired you.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine this gets pretty sensitive at times.
It gets very sensitive. I mean, the reality is, I would say this, most of the companies that we work with, the most challenging ones are the ones that already think that they have grasp of this issue. The ones that don't understand it and they know that they don't understand or they feel like they don't understand it, they are typically a little bit easier to work with, because
they're further down the highway. They're recognizing a problem,
recognizing
which is half the problem. Yeah,
exactly. The reality is most people don't like to hear that their baby is ugly, right? So
So
that's what we have to do and let them know, yeah, you're doing things okay, but your baby is rather ugly.
By the way,
yeah,
if you don't mind my saying,
it literally is just having conversations and using data, statistics, and showing them, you know, this is why you only have 1% African Americans, 3% Hispanic, 13% minorities in general inside a 10,000 plus, you know, company.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Hey, how do you determine, again, I should say, I'm visiting with Lewis Bird, who's founder of the Kansas City-based Melly Blue Branding, about the need for diversity in high-tech startups, including those here in Kansas City. You talk about interviewing the CEO, Lewis, and getting a sense from him or her about, you know, the challenges they face. How do you determine independently from those interviews with the CEOs what kind of problem exists inside of a big company like the one you just described?
Yeah, well, over the years I developed what I called, excuse the name here, this is my engineering background, but it's a cross-cultural enterprise readiness metrics.
That sounds like an engineer, Lewis.
Hey, that's what it is right
there. Yeah.
But I've created this system that basically it categorizes certain companies on a level, on five levels of where they at today within their organization. And that's based off a series of interviews, brand audits, looking at also their internal culture and communication, interviewing past employees, interviewing current employees.
Wow.
And really,
so it's a big process. Then,
it's a
it sounds
huge
like.
Process. And it takes a lot of resources and a lot of time. But when it's done right and effectively, it can really make a huge difference and start to shift the culture. And and basically bringing it back to the business, though. That's the most important part. Mm-hmm. How is this going to be beneficial for our business and help us grow and help us ultimately, you know, get more positive in that bottom line?
How is it going to help a business? So we talk about diversity. People get, okay, it's important. And does it affect the bottom line?
Absolutely.
How so?
Well, I'll give you this. Companies that are more diverse have 15 times more sales revenue than companies that are less diverse.
Wow.
That's huge, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if you are an engineering company based here in the United States and you want to go overseas to, let's say, India and set up a refinery there. Well, you have to understand, how do you employ people in that region? How are the practices of your business going to be received by people of that community? If it's not well received, then it's going to be that much harder for you to set up shop and do productive with the business. So it can have huge implications on not only the bottom line, but your entire culture, how your business is perceived by the community, and ultimately the brand, which I believe is, in today's economy, is your business.
You know, you tell a great story, Lewis, about what we're talking about right now. It's from a hospital in Michigan. Mm-hmm. It's not India, but it's Michigan, that had a high rate of Vietnamese women who were extremely dehydrated while giving birth. I'll let you take that story from that point.
Yeah, basically, the hospital had a high rate of women, Vietnamese women, that were extremely dehydrated during the birthing process. And what happened was, you had all these hospital practitioners trying to understand what is going on. They did all these tests, and they figured out that it wasn't anything biologically wrong with these women. The problem was, it was a cultural difference. And that difference was, these women in Vietnamese traditional culture, they view the birthing period as a warm period. So basically, they didn't believe in drinking cold water or eating ice chips. That's part of their culture. And the nursing staff never understood to ask them, well, how would you like, you know, the temperature of your water?
Oh,
or would you prefer tea or any other type of liquid to help keep them hydrated? And because of that, they weren't accepting our Western traditions, and they were having extreme levels of dehydration, which ultimately impacts how the baby latches on after birth. You know, and then you have people staying in the hospital for a longer period of time, raising insurance rates, raising hospital operational costs. And that's how it ties back to the bottom line, by just simply understanding the cultural nuances of people.
That's really interesting.
It can solve things.
Let's go to a phone call here from Bill from KCK. And by all means, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Bill from Kansas City, Kansas. Hi, Bill.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank you for letting me become part of the conversation.
Sure.
I got a combination, I guess, question and comment. I mean, given the nature of this culture and this economy, the economy is based on disadvantage and opportunity. And we all know that if someone is advantaged, that means someone is disadvantaged. And that's proven simply by the very conception of the government enslaving people chattelly. So obviously that's a grave disadvantage right now. And over the course of years and centuries, that's got to do something psychological to the people that have enslaved other people and lived through the benefit of that enslavement in our present day. So back to my question and comment, given that that might be the case, maybe you might not agree with me, but how do you go to school in white culture America and not come out a flaming idiot racist?
Our racist bias is so built into our culture that no matter what we do, we can't escape them, I think is where Bill's going there.
Yeah, well, you know, well, Bill, thanks for calling in first. And you have some validity there. Our background is what makes up much of how we view the world. You know, people always say, we see the world as it is, but that's not true. We actually see the world as we are. Mm-hmm. So I like to say that, you know, in today's economy, I don't think that people are necessarily always being racist on purpose. And it's definitely not the case. But what happens is we do tend to have these certain biases that are based off our background that definitely do hinder how we see the world as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, you know, if you have if you grew up in a rural town where there was no black people or no Hispanic people, and your only view of those type of people was on TV, which is, you know, slanted with media and all types of stereotypes, mm-hmm. then yes, you're going to have a certain type of perception on different people. But this is the challenging part is you have to be willing to be open-minded about it, mm-hmm. and have the willingness to be able to respect people first and foremost, regardless of who they are and where they come from, as long as they give you respect back. But that's the challenge, and that's where, you know, in diversity training, unconscious bias comes in. It's just mm-hmm. simply recognizing your bias. Again, bias is not a bad thing in and of itself. It's just that when you utilize your bias to be able to hinder how you are, to implement how you make decisions, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I want to go back to this notion of these interviews that you do with employees and company CEOs. I'm wondering, as you dive into a company and its culture and you're interviewing folks around a large company, how honest is your sense that they'll be with somebody like you? How worried are you that they might end up getting fired if they're too straightforward with you?
Well, there's always that worry there, but at the same time, you know, that you have to address those issues and be honest with it, you mm-hmm. know. So I always encourage people that I work with, you know, regardless of where you're at, you know, just be honest. And there's actually a test that we utilize. It's called an IAT test. It's basically a implicit aptitude test that it'll tell you, you know, and it'll tell you directly how you think about bias at a subconscious level. Mm. So it's a computer software. So, and that tends to open people's eyes up a lot more.
That's interesting. So. I'm wondering, what kind of unconscious biases do you see in the companies that you end up helping, Lewis, that you have to wind up bringing to their attention?
Yeah, okay. So for example, as we talk about gender, for example, let's say a manager is doing a employee review with somebody and they bring up the word aggressive in a, you know, in a report, in an mm-hmm. employee report. Sometimes aggressive can be viewed, if it's a male, as a positive thing. Like, he's aggressive with sales and he goes out and gets sales and he does a great job at it. He's very aggressive in nature, and that's viewed as a positive thing. Whereas that same manager can write aggressive for a female employee, and that's her being looked at as she's too overpowering or mm-hmm. or too overbearing for some people, so mm-hmm. she needs to tame it back. So what we do is we like to look at those things and try to recognize, and if we recognize that pattern, then it comes down to, okay, we need to figure out a common language at this organization where aggressive means this for this business. So when a manager writes down aggressive, everyone in the organization understands this is what we mean.
So language is key here.
Language is absolutely key.
Can you give us an example of some companies that are doing all this right?
Well, that's a great question. again,
I hope somebody out there is.
There's companies that are definitely making real great efforts, and they're getting it to a large degree. Again, Intel is doing a fantastic job with where they're at today, but they are also still struggling with the more inclusive aspect of the business. So, for example, you know, they had this past year they had a great percentage growth with diversity recruitment, and certainly with women diversity, which is kind of like that's the new face of diversity is women.
Why is it the new face?
Well, you know, if I had to be 100% honest with you, it's really not the new face. And let's back up again. So this whole idea of the equal employment and affirmative action dates back to the civil rights period. And that's where diversity training really started to pick up. And the reality is the greatest benefactors of any type of affirmative action and equal employment has been women, and predominantly white women mm-hmm. at that. That has always been, like, they have been the greatest benefactor. So now today, you know, 50-something years later, we're still looking at industries. If you really pay attention to the conversations that top, you know, CEOs at different organizations are having, they're talking about diversity. But the first thing they lead with is women, women, women. Mm-hmm. And they're ignoring the elephant in the room, which is ethnicity, race, sexual orientation, all the other parts of it. Mm-hmm. So we're really starting to see a lot of that.
I'm wondering what you're seeing, again, going back to the article that originally brought you to us here in Startland, your concerns about diversity in the tech community here in Kansas City. What are you seeing? What are your concerns?
My biggest concern is, you know, being actively involved, going out to KC Startup Week, going to Kauffman's 1 Million Cups, all these different places where there's a lot of venture for entrepreneurship as well as tech startups. You're starting to see it's an influx of the same people. And what I mean by the same people, yes, there's the same groups of people that are there, but it's literally the same type of person. And my biggest concern is some of these organizations aren't doing enough to reach out towards people from diverse backgrounds. And it's as simply as letting other people know about these events. There's been several occasions where I've gone to networking events or just different types of startup events, and I was the only black male or one of the only black males in an entire room of 100+ people. And, you know, not to put all the blame on the organizations, there's certainly some responsibility to be held as an entrepreneur from the new majority. You know, you have to be willing to step outside your comfort zone. But I also feel like some of these organizations can do a much better job in going out and finding these different types of entrepreneurs that aren't necessarily over on, what is that, 49th and State Line in Startup Village.
How open are these companies here in town to receiving the message that you're delivering?
Well, I would say that I believe in putting your worst foot forward, right? And with that being said, one of my challenges here in Kansas City is getting more people, especially at the corporate enterprise level, to be receptive. And that can be the nature of where we are at regionally or, you know, where we're at in the Midwest.
I'm hearing that this is becoming a challenge. This is a challenge here locally.
It's definitely a challenge. I believe that a lot of people understand what I'm talking about and definitely see the need, but they're not ready to actually take action. Sadly, I feel like some of our companies here, some of our great companies here, they are in so many ways being followers. They're waiting to see what other people do, because I've had such a much easier time making connections with decision makers over at Intel, Twitter, Google, all these different places, and they are receptive, and we're having great conversations about how we could work together. But here, yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
Well, Lewis Bird is the founder of Melly Blue Branding, a cross-cultural branding agency that bills itself as helping companies elevate their brands through strategy, creativity, and a fundamental idea of being more human. Thanks for bringing this to our attention, Lewis. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.